The topic before us is living alone. Now, everybody has a rather personal definition of living alone. For some, it is a terrible thing. For some, it is the most natural thing in the world. Lewis Perry is going to tell you how he defines living alone, and you make notes about the kind of question you want to put to him after he finishes his meditation on living alone. This is a gentleman of sterling qualities. I think you will see how sterling he is when he starts to talk about living alone. Let us welcome Lewis Perry.
Now I'll try my turn at the mic. And if you, everybody can hear me, raise your hand if you can. The chairman of the Yusuf Fund asked me to put in a good word at the beginning here, but I think I'll elect to do that at the end. If I make it through to the end, and if you make it through to the end, we'll have a little word about the Yusuf Fund then, but not right now. And because of my optical powers, I have to get close to my text. For 93 of my 96 years, I lived with parents, siblings, college roommates, Navy buddies, two wives, three daughters, various grandchildren, various stepchildren, student tenants, and foreign refugees. I confess I have always had some trepidation about living alone. I can fry an egg, but that is about the extent of my cooking skills. I enjoy reading aloud and love having guests around a dinner table. I shared my bed with two successive wives for 66 years. I made joint decisions about time management with others for 93 years. I have always worried what would happen if I ended up living alone. So, my topic today is to say that I am now living alone and doing well. I give my second wife, Liz, credit for our having moved to Piedmont Gardens, where I have a community of friends. But what have I learned in the last 3 years since the death of my second wife? I am now fully responsible for my use of my time. And this talk is my accounting for my stewardship, for the stewardship of my time. What do I have to show for my use of time? I would like to describe five different aspects of my life while living alone. Reading, writing poetry, music, family, community. Five subjects. You can keep track of how I'm doing as we proceed. Reading. In the last 3 years, all reading has been done with a Kindle reader. And I have indulged my interest in crime fiction. Michael Conley, Sheldon Spiegel, David Baldacci, Donna Leon, and others. Also John Grisham, who writes legal thrillers. Now, reading out loud was a favorite recreation in the past. I read hundreds of books aloud to my first wife over a period of 50 years. In 2016, I had a chance to do this again. A resident here was ill, confined to skilled nursing, and I read aloud to her for an hour a day, 4 mornings a week for 7 weeks. And ended after she recovered in the summer of 2016. I read her some short stories by James Thurber and A Spool of Blue Thread by Ann Tyler. Another reading adventure included me as a listener. A friend here was reading aloud to another resident with macular degeneration, and I was invited along with a third woman to listen. And this went on for more than a year, but was suspended after the death of two of the women. We read several books during that period, books which we mutually agreed upon. And right now, what am I reading? I'm reading a David Baldacci novel called Total Control. Now the second topic, writing poetry. I am a poetry ignoramus. Until 2016, I had never read poetry or written poetry or paid any attention to it. I was a poetry zero. My first poem was written on September 9th, 2016, as a private message to a friend in anticipation of September the 11th, the 15th anniversary of the 9/11 attacks. And I had no idea of writing or publishing anything anytime. But the new issue of The Crest then registered with me. If Fran and Flossie and Matt could write and publish, why couldn't I? So I tried a short poem, and Nina published it October 1, 2016. And since then, I have had a new poem in every issue, about 30 to date. What I love to do is read it out loud. That's the point of writing it, to read it out loud. On previous public occasions, I've read poems about my trigeminal neuralgia, about my surgery and the recovery, about my wife's death, and about my spiritual journey. But on this occasion, I have selected three new poems to read about new subjects, such as my style of writing, my motivation, and my inspiration. This poem is titled Stream. This is a stream of words. Words about poems and poetry, about poets writing poems based on their conscious experiences. And the poets are two, Lewis and Billy. Billy is Billy Collins, USA Poet Laureate. Lewis is an aging poet who lives in Oakland, CA, USA. He's learning. He has written poems for less than 2 years. Billy has written and published for decades. Lewis hardly knew Billy's name. He certainly hadn't read any of Billy's poems. Somebody said, Billy writes like Lewis. How could that be? Billy wrote first. Yeah, somebody said, but Lewis just wrote. Billy's style is like that of Lewis. Lewis sees and looks, feels and thinks. And out comes a stream of words. And that's what Billy does. The words cover mundane, everyday, commonplace things. The rising sun, the morning fog, the songs of birds, the sounds of trucks, the morning news, the national events, the fate of the world, the love of God. That's the subject matter that Lewis pays attention to. And Billy does the very same thing. He has universal respect. Lewis will never catch up with Billy, nor should he even try. For Lewis, it is enough to know that somebody thinks the two are similar. Space for Grace. That's the title, Space for Grace. The other day I heard these words. They make a title, begging for a poem. So this is my humble effort to fill the available void. 3 years ago in December, I lost Liz, my second wife. My life seemed drawing to a close with nothing left worth living for. But that was not to be, thank God. I was saved by the grace of finding things to do that got me outside myself, like a snake with new skin. To name them all is tedious, and you won't believe them all. But the fact is, I found the space and time to do these things for others. The secret was finding other-centered activity, not self-centered. What I do for friends and community is what makes my life worth living. Now, such a conclusion may seem obvious to those who have already found it, and I hope you are one of those. But I had to learn it for myself by making space for grace anew. Now finally, inspiration. Today I heard a piece of music by the Gypsy Kings called Inspiration. It set me to thinking about my work. What inspires me to try to write verse? Music is such a ready source of beauty, of harmony, of virtuosity, especially when the human voice is accompanied by harps and violins, by guitars and mandolins. But words alone can give the urge to write lines that carry weight, that flow with grace from human tongue, that lift the spirits of all who hear. My experience these past 2 years is that all it takes is a word or a phrase to set the mind in motion, going where the imagination pleases. One friend gave me the phrase, sacred time. Not knowing what was meant, I pushed the idea to a prayer for grace in this sacred time. Inspiration is like a gift from the blue sky, from outer space, from the recesses of the mind, from the ultimate source, God. I can't predict it, I can't control it, I can't design it, I can't suppress it. All I can do is express it, share it, and walk humbly with God's grace. How am I doing? Third subject, music. I have been a consumer and producer of music all my life, and that has continued during the last 3 years. As a consumer, I attended most of the live music events here, both classical and popular. We have such an extraordinary opportunity to hear good music here, free. As a producer, I played both violin and oboe as a child, and sang in a barbershop quartet briefly, and in my church choir for many decades. I even met my first wife in the church choir. When I stopped driving in 2013, I thought my singing days were over because I couldn't get the choir rehearsal. Not so. I was able to continue singing thanks to the Hootenanny group. Singing with the Hootenanny has become the replacement. But there is more. My family prevailed on me to get an iPhone in 2016. And with the help of my granddaughter, I learned how to access Pandora. And I became a fan of Latin jazz and popular guitar music. And I use it to stimulate and regulate my exercise program for my legs. I do physical therapy exercises for my arthritic knees. And with a Bluetooth speaker, I can take the music up to the roof in the summer, right up there. My first artistic endeavor was to prepare a program of recorded music by Antonio Carlos Jobim that my family helped me present here at LPG on Father's Day 2017. My second artistic endeavor was a composition, a song entitled Waltzing with Joy. It was a simple tune in the key of C and 3/4 time. The words were based on the lecture here by Dr. John Chuck entitled The Three Keys to Contentment. And the Hootenanny learned the song and sang it here several times. My third artistic endeavor was another song entitled Waltzing with Love. The music was similar to a Jobim song in the key of C with 3/4 time. And the lyrics were based on my poem, Never Too Late. And that song was sung in a church service at my church, the First Congregational Church of Berkeley, FCCB, in 2018. And I gave the song to Derek Tam, the choir director at FCCB, and he arranged it for piano and soprano and then performed it with Julie Greer, the singer. What a thrill that was for me. My fourth artistic endeavor has been the reading of the poem Never Too Late out loud as part of the Hootenanny concerts, thanks to Vanjie. I have read it 3 times now, and it has been the most gratifying experience of my recent life. To paraphrase, it's never too late to be creative and to share joy and delight with others. That's 3 out of 5. Next, family. To say I'm living alone is only superficially true. I have 3 daughters living in California, 2 in Berkeley, and 1 in Yreka. I see all daughters frequently. I also have 4 grandchildren, all living in California. I still own my house in North Berkeley. My middle daughter, sitting right over there, Cynthia, my middle daughter lives in it and takes care of it. A typical weekend has her picking me up on Friday afternoon, and I spend 2 nights in Berkeley. I go to church in Berkeley on Sunday morning and then return here for Sunday dinner at noon. She and I discovered a recreation that I will call wheelchair bird walking. There are many accessible paths along the East Bay shore, from Coyote Hills Regional Park to Point Pinole. My daughter keeps a wheelchair in the car and brings her digital camera, and I have binoculars, and we look at birds and photograph them. With her help and driving, we have taken 4 long trips in the last 3 years. In 2016 and 2017, we drove to Yreka to visit my oldest daughter, and then went to Ashland to see plays at the Oregon Shakespeare Festival. In 2018, my 2 younger daughters and I drove to Bishop in Inyo County on the east side of the Sierras. We were able to find and visit the ranch in Mono County, just north of Bishop, where my family had lived from 1912 to 1922 before I was born. It was the fulfillment of my ambition to show my daughters a place where my parents had lived. And that trip included a detour to see the bristlecone pines and another side trip to picnic along the Merced River in Yosemite Valley. The other big trip in 2018 was a trip to Mount Shasta. My eldest grandson, who now lives in Redding, got married at the Mount Shasta Resort Hotel on Lake Siskiyou. And the marriage was notable for two reasons. It occurred during a wildfire when the
excuse me.
It occurred during the wildfire.
Maybe I should take a drink of water at this point. Please excuse me. Thank you. Thanks.
It occurred during a wildfire when the atmosphere was smoky and we had to take a 2-hour detour to get there since Interstate 5 was closed. Nevertheless, the guests all showed up in the smoke and it was a great occasion. I was asked to say something at the reception and I wrote a poem for the occasion honoring the groom, his bride, and the mother who raised him. And I now have a granddaughter-in-law. The other big family occasion in 2018 was the marriage of my eldest granddaughter. She went to India to marry a native of India, whom she had met in graduate school at UC Berkeley, who now lives in the US. They now live in San Francisco and are expecting their first child. So I may be a great-grandfather before the year is out. So in just 1 year, I have seen two grandchildren married and acquired a granddaughter-in-law and a grandson-in-law. Talk about joy and delight. Fortunately, I see my family members frequently because they still gather for dinner around the dining table in North Berkeley. My iPhone has also helped me to stay in touch. My grandchildren even respond to my texts. Finally, community. There are three activities I want to talk about under the heading of community here at PG. The Film Committee, the Resident Foundation Committee, and GEAR. I have served twice as a member of the film committee for a total of 4 years out of 8. First time was 2 years when Harriet Williams was the chair, and then again for the last 2 years. The film committee has two jobs, and the easy one is choosing films. The hard one is running a theater every Thursday night. The first period I was on the committee, the challenges defeated us. We couldn't run the theater, we all quit and gave up. By buying new equipment and turning the theater around, the job was resumed successfully. Now we are going through another crisis requiring new projectionists and theater management. And I hope and think it will work out. The Resident Foundation Committee, which is formerly known as the Benevolent Support Committee, engages in fundraising activities to support the Resident Endowment Foundation. This is the source of funds for the subsidies that enable Piedmont Gardens to fulfill the promise of support to the end of life for those who exhaust their funds through no fault of their own. This is the ultimate promise we made to each other. And nothing is more important here, in my view. I have served 3 years on the committee, including 2 years as secretary, and my term will expire this year, 2019. It has been an honor to serve you. GEAR. GEAR. What is GEAR? It's an acronym, it's an activity, and it's a godsend. G is for expressing gratitude. E is for exercise, both body and mind. A is for accepting change and adapting. R is for cultivating old and new relationships. Now, the idea and theory of gear came from Dr. John Chuck, the son of a former resident, the Reverend James Chuck. I'm sure many of you remember James. Part of his work, part of his work is the continuing education of doctors and healthcare workers in the Kaiser system in Northern California. Dr. John says that medical research and literature support the idea there are four variables that distinguish people who age successfully from those who don't. And the four variables are gratitude, exercise, adaptability, relationships. The practice of gear was started here by Reverend James Chuck coordinator and Doris Pummel. And the work of gear is done in wellness circles that meet weekly to talk about gear. At the present time, there are seven such circles here that are active. And I have succeeded James as the coordinator, and a successor for me needs to be found. I say, finally, gear is a godsend. It was for me after my second wife, Liz, died. I needed a focus, an activity, the support of friends, and a job. It gave me a responsibility, something that was regular and demanding that I couldn't just drop willy-nilly. And I now facilitate two circles, Monday at 3:30 p.m. and Thursday at 3 p.m. And it has been my number one commitment to the community here. If you want to know more about gear, talk to me anytime, anywhere. Call me, stop me in the hall, talk to me over dinner. My mantra is gear today, gear tomorrow. Now, here's the point where I'm going to do the money pitch for Ruth Ann. There are four activities here during the year where I get pressed to give some money or do something that relates to fundraising. And the first one, as you know, is the team appreciation event, which is just before Christmas. And the second one is the USA Fund in the spring. And that's the one that's going on right now. And the third one is usually in the summer, and that's the Resident Foundation, which supports the subsidies. And the last one where I get drawn in is the White Elephant Jewelry Sale. I don't buy jewelry, but I get drafted to do a minor job. But I wanted my friends who work on the White Elephant Jewelry Sale to know that I consider that one of the four activities that where money raising seems to be very important. Right now, we're in the middle 2 weeks out of three for the USA Fund. And Ruth Ann tells me that as of Sunday, there were 42 residents who had made a contribution, and the total was about $11,000. And there's $14,000 yet to raise in this final week in order to take advantage of the matching funds that are available. You hear that? $14,000 available in matching funds. All you have to do is write a check and put it in the envelope to get that $14,000 to work for the USA Fund. I can't think of anything more important to plug tonight than the use of fun. Was that okay, Ruthanne? Okay, it's, of course, 7:30. We'll wrap it up. In closing, I would like to acknowledge the assistance and friendship of many people here at PG who have helped make this transition to living alone not only bearable but fun. The staff members who know my name and smile in the hall, or bring my favorite food before I even place an order. The nurses who attend to my cuts and bruises. The many people I have the pleasure of conversing with over dinner. The movies, musical concerts, gear circles, and outings. My last 3 years have been more fun and more rewarding than I could have imagined. I have experienced an awakening of sorts. I have not had to consult with anyone about my time management. I've tried new things, gone new places, and made new friends. And at age 96, going on 97, I still am looking forward to more fun. The end.
I'm turning the mic over to my lady here, and if you have any question or a pertinent comment or an experience that you would like to share, please.
So please raise your hand if you have a question for Lewis. I will come to you so you could use the mic.
Good.
There's an expression in Yiddish about the kind of man Lewis is, and it's called a mensch. Lewis is a mensch. He is a stand-up guy. Thank you, Lewis.
Thank you, Will.
Anybody else?
Oh, sorry.
This is not a comment, Lewis, a request. I'm hoping that you either have memorized or you have a copy of It's Never Too Late. Would you share it with us?
I'd love to. And you have it, Cynthia? Cynthia will come up with it. All right. If you want
to.
Another
question is going to take me a minute to know.
Wilma. Yeah. Wilma, it's in the first row.
In the first row.
Here, dear.
Oh, Mina.
Lewis, I just want to tell you what a pleasure it's been to sit next to you in poetry. And that has really given me a big lift in life. And thank you so much.
You're welcome, Wally. It's been fun. I enjoyed the poetry potpourri too.
Do you have it?
Hang on. Any other questions? Till we find the poem.
Lewis, what's the difference between being alone and being lonely? How would you define that?
Well, I'm never lonely.
Yes, talk about that.
Living alone is a sort of a physical thing. It's about the space you occupy and the time you occupy and how you travel. But being lonely is a state of mind, and if you If you have a life like mine, you have a good state of mind.
Did you hear that?
Yes.
Does anybody else have another take on the difference between being alone and being lonely? Something to share with us? Okay, we can't get.
Oh, I got it.
He has it too. With the help of my. Okay. All right.
This is the poem Never Too Late. It's never, not ever, never too late to mend a silly mistake or even one that was serious. It is never too late to express regret. It's never, not ever, never too late to say that you're sorry for your mistake, especially the serious one. It's never too late to apologize. It's never, not ever, never too late to feel affection, to want attention from someone you wish you knew better. It's never too late to feel love for the other. It's never, not ever, never too late to heed the call to love one another, to love your neighbor as yourself. It's never too late to feel God's love. It's never, not ever, never too late to become a person who loves the other, a person who loves the neighbor, a person who loves God and all others together. It's never, no, never, never too late to receive respect and love from the other, to receive love from one another, to share joy and delight with all others. It's never, no, never, never too late to express gratitude to the other, to feel grateful for all the others who praise and thank God for God's love.
Well, with this blessing on all of us, let me remind you that in another month we will have another lovely lecture, and it will be by one of you. And if I haven't approached you and you have something to share with us, you approach me and say, I'd like a crack at this. Okay? So, goodbye. And good luck.
I'll take that away.